You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart. And to all of our readers, a reminder that next week is our Get Lit with All of It book club event with author Xochitl Gonzalez. We're spending the month reading her novel Anita De Monte Laughs Last. And on Thursday, we'll gather at the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Library to celebrate. Xochitl will be there along with special guest Caridad de la Luz, spoken word poet, singer, and songwriter, and executive director of the famed New Yorican Poets Cafe. Tickets are free, but you have to reserve them in advance, so head to wnyc.org/getlit to find out more. Okay, on to today's show. Today, we're going to be presenting a special producer picks show. That's when the excellent producers from Team All of It come on the show to introduce some of their favorite segments. So today, you're going to hear from producers Jordan Loff and Simon Close. And in honor of Women's History Month, they've selected segments that feature female trailblazers, focus on significant women from history, or spotlight the work of female artists and creatives. So let's kick things off with one of those awesome female creatives who is now a newly minted Oscar winner. Here is producer Jordan Loff to tell us more about film editor Jennifer Lame, who just took home the award for best editing for her work on Oppenheimer. Jordan, take it away.
Thanks, Kusha. One of my favorite parts of every year is Oscar season, when I help put together our lineup for our annual series, The Big Picture. That's a series of conversations with below-the-line Oscar nominees, people who worked behind the scenes to create movie magic. We speak with costume designers and cinematographers and production designers. I was so excited to book editor Jennifer Lame for the show, and not just because of her work on Oppenheimer. Her filmography is kind of crazy and filled with some of my favorite movies. She edited Hereditary, Manchester by the Sea, Tenet, and worked for years with director Noah Baumbach on films like Marriage Story and Frances Ha. Jennifer had a really big job for Oppenheimer. She had to cut for film and for IMAX. She had to make a 3-hour movie move quickly. She had to cover decades of history and, of course, edit that mind-blowing Trinity test sequence. I thought the interview was really great, and I was so thrilled to see Jennifer take home the Oscar this year for Best Editing. Here's Allison's conversation with Jennifer Lame.
Before we discuss the details of Oppenheimer, how would you describe the responsibilities of a film editor?
Ooh, that's a tough question. You'd think I'd gotten better at this point. But yeah, I think my responsibility is just kind of putting the movie together and kind of preserving the initial kind of reaction I get from the script and talking to the director in the beginning. And then obviously, you know, I'm usually there the whole shoot, so I kind of see how things are evolving and, you know, issues that have come up. And then, you know, then we have the movie that's shot and, you know, we're trying to emulate as best as we can that script. And it's the feeling of the script as opposed to the exact scenes and lines, because obviously my job is a lot of changing all of that and putting together the best film that's been shot, if that makes sense.
Well, what's the first thing you do when you get a script?
It varies based on director. So you mentioned Noah Baumbach, who I worked with for a very long time, and he's incredible. And, you know, I would get a script really, he would send me a script really early, and we would kind of workshop the script, and I would almost edit the script with him. With Chris Nolan, I go and read it at his house, and it's very close to shooting, and it's very kind of locked in. You know, the two times I've read his scripts, I never, there was not much editing to be done. And I just was like, shoot the script. He asked me, you know, is there anything to be cut? And I, in the two times I've read his scripts, there was nothing. So it's always a different process based on what a kind of director needs from you on that level, the script level.
Which is why I thought it was so interesting. I mean, they both make great films, but a Noah Baumbach film is very different from a Christopher Nolan film.
Yes.
So how do you, I mean, that speaks to your talent, your ability to be flexible and go in between and work with different kinds of people. Is that just something that you've, a skill you've acquired over time, or is that just who you are?
I think getting, you know, my first film was Frances Ha with Noah Baumbach, which is an incredible movie.
Oh, and what a great
movie. That movie. I love that movie, and I just saw Greta last night, and yeah, it's just, it was a great first film as an editor, because Noah is so experimental in the editing room, and we got to do so much cool stuff on that film. And I think getting to work with a writer-director, I've actually mostly worked with writer-directors, and it's kind of a specific thing that I think I've grown quite fond of and quite comfortable doing working with writer directors. And that's kind of the through line, even mm-hmm. though the films are all quite different. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a specific personality and type that I really enjoy working with.
Once you have made your first rough cut of a film, you have the first rough cut, what are you hoping to accomplish? What are some of the aims for the very first pass through?
I think for me, it's just getting to know the footage and working it and learning all the performances. And in this particular film, there was just an insane amount of amazing performances from all the way from obviously Robert Downey Jr., Killian, Emily Blunt, Florence Pugh, Matt Damon. And then you have all the scientists and they're all incredible actors. And it was the ensemble in this cast was incredible. So for me, it's just really getting to know each character and each performer and all the takes and the different stuff they've given me. And then just structurally starting to put it together. But yeah, it's kind of like baby steps. It's like, you know, you can't think about the big picture right away. You have to take baby steps and just, you know, get to know each character and slowly start piecing it together and learn all the footage. It's kind of my first step. So the assembly is really just getting to know the movie. I'm not trying to put together a great film. That's impossible. It's just, and Chris is really great with about that. Like whenever I do my assemblies, he's like, you know, just know the footage and work it and experiment. But obviously it's going to take a while to edit the film, you know.
Is there a particular scene or a moment in the film that looks very different from how it first was presented, how you first assembled it?
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there was a scene when Killian and Emily are kind of having a confrontation after he finds out about Jean's death and he kind of goes into the woods and she finds him. Really early on in my assembly, I'd put this incredible performance by Killian where he's staring right at her and he's sobbing and it's this beautiful performance. But as we kept refining the film, we kind of started to realize that it didn't make sense. And we found Killian gave so many performances where he's kind of looking down and he's not even crying so hard. He's just in shock. And we played more of the scene on Emily, Kitty's character. And, it really made their relationship more interesting and you really felt this kind of care they had for each other. So, and the scene always worked, but it didn't get to the next level till really late when we kind of replaced that take and played more of it on Kitty and messed with the Jean cut. So that was a really fun scene to keep kind of tweaking. Cause it feels like a small scene, but comes at such a huge turning point. And the two female characters in that scene are just so important to his journey, you know?
When you're working on a film like this, how many different types of media were you working with?
I just work on the computer in the Avid, but then I have an amazing team of people. A lot of them New Yorkers, actually, transplant New Yorkers, that come and I have a editorial team that helps me with the, you know, the Avid material, mm-hmm. not to get too in the weeds. And then there's a whole film department that's cutting film as I'm cutting. So that's something I'm very conscious of. You know, every cut I make, there's a person named Tom Foligno who's cutting the film. And we show the director's cut on film with pieces of tape. So at any point it could break and it's terrifying. But it's terrifying in a great way. You know, it's like this adrenaline rush of watching this, like you can see your cuts, you can see your splices. It's incredible.
We actually got someone who sent us a text or a call who is very into the segment right now and said he wanted to ask Jennifer her approach to using the music of Ludwig Göransson, the composer.
Mm. Oh my God, he's fantastic. I've been lucky enough to work with Ludwig now 3 times. And yeah, him and Chris, they start working on the music really early on, like right before the shoot and during the shoot, and Ludwig is constantly doing stuff. So Chris doesn't use temp music, so I cut my assembly with no music. And then pretty early on, as Chris and I start working, he'll start playing me stuff that Ludwig has sent, and we lay it in. So the Trinity sequence, we had that piece of music basically when we started cutting it, and it's an incredible piece of music. And I feel so lucky to work with Ludwig, and he's constantly experimenting. He's constantly popping over to the edit room and watching scenes, and then he'll try something new. It's a really amazing process working with him.
Let's talk about the Trinity scene since we're there. The Trinity test, when the team finally tests to see if the bomb works. There are so many different cuts to characters. They're building tensions. There's shaking hands and buttons. There's sound that goes on for a moment, you know, goes out. It's just quiet. Let's start with all the different perspectives. How does using all the different perspectives build tension?
Yeah, I think, like I said about the ensemble cast, like leading up to Trinity, I feel like all the scientists and their faces and kind of their slight, like they don't get too much screen time, but their personalities really shine. And I feel like when we get to the Trinity sequence, their faces become so important and their nervousness. And when they're in that room and they're doing the measurements and they kind of make jokes to each other. And I think for me, what's so amazing about that sequence is how young these guys are and how scared they are. And you kind of feel like you're there. So I really wanted to create that kind of environment, as did Chris, obviously. And yeah, just really showing all the little machinations to build to this moment that's terrifying for these guys. And so that was really important, playing it on these faces and showing these guys and how hard they worked and how nervous they are. And yeah, and then obviously all the amazing stuff that Ruth, the production designer, did with the bomb and the tent and all the little, and, you know, the mattress rolling under the, like, crazy that they were just rolling mattresses in case it fell. And just, we wanted to just highlight all these details to really make show you how, you know, kind of rough it all was and experimental. And yeah.
What was a tough decision to make in that particular season scene for you?
In the Trinity sequence?
Yeah, because that's the one you got to get right.
Yeah, it's so funny because that one to me was kind of the most fun to cut. Chris and I had that music. I think the hardest scene in that whole section was the part when Kistakowski comes in the tent and he says kind of that thing failed. And there's just a lot going on in that tent, and it's raining and the phone rings and the guys are making bets about whether they're going to ignite the atmosphere. And so that tent sequence kind of that sets it all off. Kind of the second half of the Trinity section, like the night half when it starts raining, that particular scene we cut many, many different versions of, and there's just a lot going on. But once we kind of lift off after that tent scene, I feel like the rest, it was kind of just putting in the pieces and tinkering around, and it was more just fun. You know, it was a really, that sequence was really kind of like the machinations of it all and getting all the little pieces right. And we were constantly tweaking it, but, It was really just, kind of just putting it together. Whereas other sections of the film, I find, like, were more challenging, editorially speaking, than that one.
Like what?
Yeah. I think, like, the first 20 minutes of the film and kind of after the bomb goes off, for me, that, especially when I was reading the script, that section of the movie I find the most interesting, but kind of, like, as an editor, the most challenging of, like, how do you keep an audience absorbed after the bomb goes off, right? Because that's what everyone's waiting for. And then the bomb goes off, and how do you keep everyone's attention all the way to the end? Because that's some of my favorite stuff. So I think that was the challenge in a good way, because I loved all the stuff. But, you know, it's a challenge. And the pacing of that last third of the film was a constant kind of stress and challenge of making sure everybody was locked in, because it's a 3-hour film. And, you know, that's as an editor, you got to keep people's attention.
Yeah. Pacing is so interesting, because pacing doesn't necessarily mean quick. It's actually almost musical in that way. It's a flow, right?
Exactly.
When you're thinking about pacing, if you think about the flow of the film, the flow of the story, how can you tell when pacing isn't working? Like, what's your Jennifer test?
Well, luckily, Chris has this great thing he's always done, where every Friday, very early on, we kind of have we invite like one or two people to the edit room and kind of sit with those people and watch the whole film, whatever kind of stage it's in, even if it's pretty rough. And that's the greatest test, right? Is sitting in a room with another person. You can feel whether they're checked out, whether they're bored, whether something's confusing. And I swear, every time the lights go up, Chris and I both kind of know what the person's going to say before they even say it, because you can kind of feel it. So that's a great test. And I think just my own gut instinct of when I'm watching something, I can tell if I feel something's too rushed or something doesn't feel natural. And I think particularly with the pacing of this film, it's kind of baked into it of when things need to be rushed and when you need to kind of feel the anxiety for Oppenheimer of things are out of control, or right after the bomb when he's waiting for the call and he's wondering what's going on, things kind of slow down because things are slowing down for him and no one's giving him information. And I think, yeah, you're right when you say it's musical. It's kind of this gut instinct musical kind of ebb and flow of you have to take the audience on the highs and the lows with the character so they never get off the train, you know, like they never get off the ride. So you have to keep the ride kind of having the ups and downs, and it can't be up all the time, obviously, because that gets boring. So yeah, it's incredibly difficult to talk about, but it is this constant calibration. And tweaking it all the way till the end on the soundstage, I would notice things sitting on the stage with the mixers. You know, I'm like, oh, this isn't good. I can tell these guys are checked out. So, you know, you're just constantly tweaking it and shaping it, you know.
What's something that's important for an editor to keep in mind when you have a film that has a lot of dialogue, interrogation scenes, there's courtroom drama, there's planning in the labs? What's important to keep in mind when with dialogue heavy moments in films?
They're obviously my favorite stuff. I loved it. I think because I came up under the great Noah Baumbach, mm-hmm. who's so good at dialogue heavy scenes. And he also shoots a lot of takes, which is great because actors kind of get lost in their characters in these performances. And I think for me, it's all about the footage, right? So if I feel like a scene isn't popping for me or doesn't have that moment, I just keep watching the dailies. And even if it's like one word or one sentence or one look or someone touching someone, like, it's just, I never give up on making something better. And I always go back to the footage as if it's like I'm an archaeologist and I'm excavating, right? And I feel like I find new and interesting things all the way at the end. And I think as an editor, a big thing is to know that you're always going to do so many passes. And again, you have to stay looking at the minutia of it, not the big picture, because you'll get overwhelmed. Because I know that I can change something all the way till the end. So, you know, we do character passes. So this week we'll do this character, and next week we'll do this character. And if you see something bad with another character, you just have to put it out of mind and you'll get to it, you know, and you just have to kind of compartmentalize that stuff and know that you can always fix something and find something great.
Cillian Murphy has a great face. You look at a lot of faces. What is it something that he does as an actor just with his face? I mean, he's born with that face, that's genetics, but actors really use their bodies. What's something that he does that is unique to him? You've looked at him a lot.
I have looked at him a lot. I mean, I don't know, because I don't know what he does, because I don't know much about acting. I just know what I think is authentic to the characters that I'm creating. But he is brilliant. And the fact that he was able to make, when I was going through the dailies and making my assembly, I couldn't look away from him. And he just brings you in. And even though he's playing this character that no one really knew what they felt or what they thought half the time, you just become so locked in and kind of obsessed with who this person is. And you don't want to leave a room with him. And I don't know how he did it, but he had that enigmatic kind of quality that I think Oppenheimer did, where people were drawn to him, but you also couldn't totally figure him out. And he just nailed it. And I don't know, maybe that's a little bit part of his personality, because he's a little bit like that. And but I think he's just a brilliant actor, and he just nailed that performance. And I was nervous, because obviously Oppenheimer the person, as everyone says, you know, no one really kind of knew who he was, so that's a tricky part to play, right? But he really nailed it.
That was Alison Stewart's conversation with film editor Jennifer Lame, who just took home the award for Best Editing at the Oscars for her work on Oppenheimer. Up next, another Oscar nominee, documentarian Nisha Pahuja, who was nominated for her film To Kill a Tiger, which focuses on one family's fight for justice in the wake of a brutal sexual assault in rural India. That's after a quick break. Stay with us.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.